Episode 17. Run it. Get some water. Hold up real quick. Fluids, hydration. Let me scooch a little closer to the mic. Hope everyone is doing great. Hope that life is shining beacons of glorious light through the heavens and into your mind's eye. And I hope that that light is refracting around your brain. And I hope that it's illuminating new neural pathways. And I hope your neuroplasticity. I hope that your neuroplasticity is just jiggly and wiggly and flip-flopping and flim-flamming. I've personally been doing great. Not a ton more to report than I feel like the last episode, working on lots of music. I've actually been working on this tune all day. Today, it goes like, I like you. I like you. I like you. It's something like that. I'm going to share that soon. Just did a show at the Yellow Spring Street Fair. It was a lot of fun. It was hot, and we were sweating, but we did the thing, and it was a blast. Also, I just got a booking agent, and I'll be talking more about that very soon, but hopefully, more shows in the future. Booking agent secured. Let's go. Felix is doing great. My partner is doing great. Things are doing great. I'm doing great. I'm a little over-caffeinated. I caffeinated myself very heavily today, and I don't feel like I'm in a bad place, but I'm definitely in a caffeinated headspace, so we're there. I'm recording this a little earlier in the day than I normally do for podcasts as well, so if you hear any outside noises, which you might not, I don't know, the block might be chill, that's why. It's a little earlier in the day. I usually record these in the dark, in the darkness, in the evening. But, these intros are always so funny to me. Thanks for listening to my brain puke. We're going to talk about the Silver Surfer today. We're going to talk about the origins of the Silver Surfer. And we all know the origins of some of the bigger characters in the Marvel and DC universes, like Batman and Spider-Man and Superman. And I wanted to explore the lesser-known origins of one of my personal favorite characters. So that's kind of why I picked this topic. The origin story unfolds like an origin story of almost like spiritual nature of like Siddhartha or Jesus, where there's these ultimate sacrifices being made. And since we talk a lot about spiritual stuff, religion, metaphysics, origins, stuff like that on the podcast, I thought the Silver Surfer's story was super fitting to dive into. And it's a little bit, we haven't really dived into the world of comics. I thought it'd be a fun little deviation from our normal path. Not that I kind of stick to any one particular theme, but I just thought it'd be cool to dive into the world of comics on the podcast. Because, honestly, I've been reading comics for, like, my whole life. They've had a huge impact on me creatively, with all of the varied stories and different characters and different perspectives and otherworldly ideas, coming to life in the cells of the comics. They've really just captivated me as an artist, visually, and as an artist and writer and music maker. And like, I just really love the characters. I really love all of the stories. They deal with life, death, heroes, aliens, weird creatures, spirits, and everything in between. And comics just have this pureness to them. I feel like writers and visual artists can feel truly expressive and do whatever they want inside of comics. There isn't as much at stake as like writing a book. Because if you write a book and let's say it's not super well received and it's like, kind of something that I don't want to say flops, but let's say it's not super well received. You spend a lot of time like dialing that book in and editing it and putting it together and getting it published. And with comics, it's kind of like if you have a flop or if an idea doesn't necessarily hit like you think it's going to hit, there's always going to be another issue coming out in a couple weeks. And it kind of I feel like for creative people who work on comics, it takes a little bit of the pressure off, and it allows them to experiment a little more and it gives them a little more courage in terms of publishing their thoughts and publishing stories that they really want to see put onto paper or just put out into the world in general. I say onto paper now, but most comics these days are read on apps or online, you know, but the sentiment still remains. Because of all of this, they have an opportunity to really think outside of the box and explore concepts that you wouldn't necessarily get in other places. And I feel like that courage that comics have created has bled into other mediums as well, other forms of media as well, into movies and into music and into visual art. I feel like comics have been a cornerstone of just art in general for a really long time. One of my favorite characters, like so many people, is Batman, because I love the villains of Batman, and they all have a really unique sense of like each one of his villains always has this neurosis about them. There's always something that they're either driven mad by something, or they feel like they have to embody something, like the Joker, the Riddler. They're like driven mad and become these larger than life villains. And usually that's how his characters are. They're more often than not, they're humans that have gone through something mentally and it has like turned them villainous. And I think that parallels reality really cool, in a really cool way. Not that other comics don't have that same parallel, but I think Batman specifically with his villains, and he himself really draws a lot of parallels with the way that we live our lives and how things in our own minds can change us and turn us into different people, either for good or bad. Like I said, I've been following comic books pretty much ever since I could start reading, and reading and understanding, and the Silver Surfer's story is really captivating. A lot of people, because of Hollywood, look at him as a character that exists heavily alongside the Fantastic Four, and in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, that's pretty much how he is painted. But in the world of comics, he very much stands on his own. He's crossed paths with Doctor Strange, the Avengers, and many, many more. His origin story is dense, like most comic book characters. And also, like most comic book characters, it's full of twists and turns and tragedy. I feel like so many comic book characters, heroes and villains, their origins are rooted in tragedy, and this one's no different. Most of the comic book characters we know and love are born from tragedy. So, all right, let's get into it. You kind of know where I'm at with comics, and I promise that with this one, you're not going to need to... I probably should have given this disclaimer earlier. You're not going to need a super huge working knowledge of comic books to enjoy this one. I'm going to break things down on a fundamental level so that even if you've never read Silver Surfer, Fantastic Four, Iron Man, Avengers, Spider-Man, doesn't matter. You'll be able to comprehend and understand what's going on. I'm not going to throw things at you that are for comic fans only, because I know not everyone reads comic books. I just think this is a super captivating story, and I wanted to share it. It takes place in a universe that is filled with sentient life, galaxies that co-mingle and share destinies. It's very sci-fi, lots of different alien species, lots of galactic alliances, interplanetary travel, wild technology, all the stuff that goes along with sci-fi galactic stories. There's also this war going on and turmoil, and there's this struggle for resources and power amongst races in the galaxy. There's also religious and spiritual wars going on, all that stuff. And I want to start off by talking a little bit about two races that come into play in this story. The first race is the Kree. And the Kree is an ancient race, a race that resembles humans, only smarter and faster and stronger, and they have different, like, blue and green colored skin. They start off doing well. Their species starts off doing well. And one day, a Kree decides to mess around with this crystal thing. And the crystal is called the Crystal of Ultimate Vision. And basically, this Kree alien tries to use the crystal to obtain power and become godlike. But this whole scenario backfired, and he wound up cursing the entire Kree race. And with this curse, they became genetically stuck, and their race stagnated and stopped evolving. It stopped progressing. So the Kree started experimenting. They started genetically modifying themselves, technologically modifying themselves. They tried breeding outside of their race, all to try to have their species progress or mutate or change. Like I said, they were stuck. This guy messed around with a cosmic crystal. He tried to become a god, and the crystal and the powers that existed inside of it were like, yo, I'm going to curse your whole race. You're stuck now. Eventually, way down the road, the Kree decide to irradiate themselves and speed up this process of evolution and mutation. And this winds up killing like half of the Kree race. And the ones that were left developed superhuman strength, the ability to fly, the ability to breathe underwater, the ability to shapeshift, and all this other cool stuff. So irradiating themselves worked, but it also killed half of them. The ones that survived became like super, super Krees. And that's pretty much the Kree in a nutshell. A really ancient race that got genetically cursed and had many attempts at trying to kickstart their evolution. The other race of aliens I want to talk about are the Skrull. And the Skrull are much newer. They're a much newer species. You can think of them as kind of having like a hive mind. They serve their hive mother, and they're focused only on dominating and taking over other organisms. But they weren't always like this. The original form of their species was genetically modified by these godlike beings called the Celestials. And they were given the ability to shapeshift along with a bunch of other cool things. But it also made them more deviant and wild after their mutation, after the gods mutated them. But before their transformation, the Skrull were peaceful. They were a trading civilization that landed on the home planet of the Kree. And they said, hey, we see you guys are stuck here and genetically, and you are having a hard time. We're going to go ahead and share technology and knowledge. And they pitied the Kree. So the Kree and the Skrull start to work together. They develop alliances. They start solving some galactic problems. Everything's going great. Skrull technology helps the Kree branch out and further their search to progress their genetics. And the Kree help the Skrull build supercomputers and space stations and empires and all that stuff. But alas, all great things come to an end. Since they joined forces, they have this great alliance now. Everything's going great, but then, of course, there are power struggles, turf wars, resource wars, all of that. And eventually, their alliance was broken. There were all of these genetic descendants from the Kree in the midst of all of this. There were races that had been created on different planets, and they developed into whole new species and civilizations and ways of life, and some aligned themselves with the Kree, and some aligned themselves with the Skrull. Basically, since the Skrull and Kree were fighting, the whole galaxy was in turmoil. Not only were the Skrull and the Kree fighting, but all of the races and species that they had created by breeding with other aliens and stuff, they were all fighting. Some of them aligned themselves with the Kree, some with the Skrull. And this is where the story of the Silver Surfer really begins, in the middle of all of this galactic discourse. Before he became the Surfer, his name was Norrin Rad, and he was from a planet called Zen-La, which, like most planets in the galaxy, was heavily affected by the Kree-Skrull War. And the Zen-Lavians, the people who lived on Zen-La, experienced this golden age of reason. They overcame war, poverty, crime, disease, want. Their lifespans were dramatically increased. They were basically living in a utopia. And they were living in a spiritual and technological and hyper-civilized utopia. And they kind of just hung out on their planet. They were like, you know what? We've seen a lot of the universe. We know what's going on out there. We're just hanging out at home base. And also because of this, they kind of became apathetic to what was going on outside of Zen-La. They were like, we're here, we're chilling, we're having a great time. And this is kind of like, I feel like, a commentary on how we can find spiritual harmony in our own life, in our own sphere, and we can become overindulgent in our own needs and wants, and we can ignore or become unaware of the needs of others outside of our bubble that we're in. Zen-La basically became like hippies, like, we're not concerned with this outside world, dude. We're doing our own thing. We're just chilling. Everything's fine, man. We've got a utopia. But in reality, all around their planet, people were dying. People, whole civilizations were at war. And Norrin Rad feels this. He sees this, and he yearns to leave Zen-La, to explore and to help other people, other species, where he can. And one day, he's having a conversation about all of this, about wanting to leave Zen-La and go help people out on different planets with his partner. And all of a sudden, the Kree and the Skrull, some of their battleships land on Zen-La. And the Zen-Lavians are like, yo, why are you guys here? We're neutral. We don't want to do war. We don't want any part of anything that's going on outside of Zen-La. So, yeah, we're a little confused on why you decided to land here. And the Kree and the Skrull are basically like, we've been fighting for a really long time, and we kind of heard that y'all have this homeworld that is a beacon of peace. You've kind of got things figured out. So we wanted to come here to learn your ways and stop fighting. We've seen the utopia you've created, and we want to make that vision our reality. So the chief master of Zen-La has the Kree and the Skrull surrender their weapons. He hands them to Norrin Rad, who is a disciple of the master of Zen-La, and asks him to show them what the importance of weapons is on Zen-La. And Norrin Rad vaporizes them with his mind. The Zen-Lavians kind of have a few, like, Scarlet Witch powers. And if you don't know who the Scarlet Witch is, basically they can kind of manipulate reality as they see fit through like learning all these methods of peace and meditation. They've tapped into this Scarlet Witch type set of powers. So Norrin Rad takes the guns, he vaporizes them with his mind, and both of the Kree and the Skrull are impressed, and they truly begin to understand the power of those that live on Zen-La and the peace that they can learn with them. They start talking about what the next steps are and how they should go about learning their peaceful ways, when all of a sudden in the sky, a being known as the Watcher appears. And all you really need to know about the Watcher is that he watches. as his name suggests, he watches. He's like this interdimensional presence that's kind of like as old as time. Not completely as old as time, but he's this interdimensional, I don't want to say God, this interdimensional celestial being that is kind of like a god. He's sort of woven into the fabric of reality, and he just watches. He takes account of what's going on. He catalogs it. And there are actually multiple watchers, but this watcher is in charge of cataloging this specific part of the galaxy. He isn't supposed to intervene. He isn't supposed to do anything about anything. He just sits and watches and takes note of what goes on. And he appears in the sky during this meeting on Zinlaw, and everyone's like, whoa, a giant floating dude in the clouds. And the watcher breaks the rules. He breaks his oath. He decides to speak to them. He decides to intervene and give them a warning. Something is coming. A creature of immense power, and a creature that's as old as, if not older, than the Watcher himself, Galactus. And I know we're getting pretty deep into this story here, so let's pause and do a slight recap. The Kree and the Skull are the two alien races that have been fighting for a really long time. They come to the planet Zinlaw, this home of peace, to learn how to stop fighting. Zinlaw is home to Norrin Rad, a.k.a. the Silver Surfer, and they're all chilling, about to bust out a plan for peace, and then they get a visit from the Watcher, and the Watcher's like, yo, Galactus is coming. That's where we're at now. And just for a frame of, frame of reference in the real world, both Galactus and the Silver Surfer make their debut in the Fantastic Four number 48 way back in 1966. And that's how long this story has been developing. That's how deep this rabbit hole goes. And it is still going today. So, yeah. With that in mind, I can't overstate how dense and rich this universe actually is. It goes decades of storytelling. It's really wonderful and alive. Anyway, who is Galactus? Initially, he was written as a mortal man that passed through a series of star fields and got galactic powers and turned evil. But his origins were rewritten, and honestly, I like the rewrite way more. That's the origin we're gonna use today. The rewritten origin of Galactus. He has been around before the Big Bang. He is this cosmic, multidimensional being that consumes planets. And sure, yeah, in that respect, he is a villain. But I don't really think of him that way. Like he's not ever really painted as a villain. Sure, in the eyes of the people of the planets that he's eating, he's a villain, but he's basically a god of destruction. And there always has to be a balance. There always has to be like a void, a black hole that consumes all so that life can begin again. And that's kind of what Galactus is. He's not consuming planets out of spite or hatred. He is literally just doing it to survive. He is such a force in the universe that he needs the nourishment of planets to keep going. He's not even really aware of the turmoil he creates. He only really just thinks of what planets hold the most energy. And that's where he goes. That's what he goes after. And now, cutting back to the Watcher, he is warning Zinlaw, yo, Galactus is coming. And he's doing this because he likes Zinlaw. He sees them as a beacon of peace. He sees them as the beacon of peace that they are. And he really doesn't want to see them get eaten like that. And just for the record, because we're talking about comic books and stuff, and why wouldn't they? Galactus rolls around in this giant, badass-looking spacecraft that has these metal tentacles that come out of the bottom of the ship, and they dig into planets that he finds, and they suck the life force out of the planet. All the while, he sits at the top of the spacecraft, pulling levers and spinning dials. It's just a really cool, I just wanted to paint the picture of what he's got, of what he looks like. It's kind of like, sure, I'm a badass god, and I can pretty much bend space and time to my will. But also, I'm just going to go ahead and ride around on this crazy-looking spaceship, blasting asteroids with lasers and going into warp drive, because why not? Oh, yeah, and he also wears a giant purple helmet with these fins that jut out from the sides and go up. So he looks really wild. He looks... When you think of an interdimensional planet-eating god, you kind of would, at least I would sort of picture something a little more organic that has like, I don't know, almost looks like a gas cloud or like a, almost like a virus with a bunch of like octopus galactic looking tentacles that sort of like strangle a planet and like slurp it up with giant teeth or something like that. But he doesn't look like this at all. He kind of looks like a giant robot, a giant like Megazord robot type thing that sits on top of this huge giant Death Star looking, well, it's like more of a disc rather than a sphere, but it's this giant spaceship with these metal tentacles that just drive into planets and stuff. I just love how they portray him, how it's like you expect one thing, but you're getting another thing. Anyway, Galactus is coming to Zenla to consume all of their energy, and he shows up shortly after the Watcher fades from telling them this. He fades from their sight, and then boom, Galactus shows up, which is kind of like, damn, you couldn't have told them sooner. Like, he shows up, he's like, Galactus is coming, and then as soon as he disappears, Galactus rolls up. He gave them pretty much no time. He shows up in his spaceship, he shoots hundreds of metal tendrils out of his spaceship down to Zenla, ready to consume the energy of the entire planet. The massive tendrils make impact and dig deep into the surface of the planet. Chaos ensues. Buildings crumble, tidal waves wash over huge parts of the planet, and everyone on the planet begins to panic. Now remember, the beings on Zenla are peace masters. Peace is how they communicate. Peace is how they fight. So the master of Zenla and Norrin Rad begin to pray to Galactus. They say for countless centuries, Zenla has aimed to teach peace and be a beacon of hope in the galaxy. Will you not show us mercy? If you destroy us, you disrupt a whole network of balance and peace that we've created. But Galactus doesn't care. He pulls a lever atop his ship, and in an instant, the master of Zenla is electrocuted and knocked unconscious. He's basically like, get out of here, Nat. I'm trying to feed. The capital city in which they are praying to him crumbles. The whole planet is beginning to crumble. Mountains are falling. Chasms are opening up to molten rock. Countless lives are lost. And Zenla's master awakens in the rubble and decides that he must try again to ask for Galactus's pity. He tells Norrin Rad and the other disciples to get into a ship and leave Zenla. If the planet crumbles, they need to leave and be alive to carry on the philosophy of peace and unity. But before they can leave, Galactus pulls another lever and electrocutes the master again, once again knocking him unconscious. So at this point, the Kree and the Skrull that are on Zenla decide, you know what? Even though we are here to learn about peace, looks like we're going to have to go fight. And they jump in their ships and they decide to team up again and they fly up into space and they approach Galactus's giant craft. They awe at it. It's otherworldly size, and for a moment, they despair, thinking it's hopeless to fight something this huge, but what other hope do we have? And they push on. They roll up on Galactus and start firing at his ship's giant tentacles and firing directly at him. And basically, this is pretty much like an ant trying to fight a fighter jet. Or like a gnat trying to fight a fighter jet. They absolutely had no hope. Galactus pulls a lever and instantly vaporizes them. Their efforts, although courageous, were indeed in vain. The remaining people of Zenla see this and begin to lose all hope. Even the master is beginning to lose hope. But not Norrin Rad. He shouts to the sky, calling for the watcher, saying, "If you do indeed care so much for Zen La and our teachings, show yourself again." And he does. The watcher appears, and Norrin Rad is very, very mad, as he should be. Basically, he's like, "How can you just sit by and let this happen? You claim you have pity on Zen La, and yet you refuse to help us. How is this pity?" And he really just calls him out at this point. Like, "You've been watching other planets getting eaten, and you just twiddle your thumbs. Help us out here. Tell me how to stop Galactus." And based on what the Watcher tells him, he gets in his ship and flies up to Galactus. He's able, through using some cool Zen La crystal technology — there's a lot of crystal technology going on in this universe — but he's able, through this cool crystal technology, to talk telepathically to Galactus. He says, "I'm not here to ask for pity. I can help you. I can give you something you need." And Galactus finds this amusing, and he decides not to vaporize Norrin Rad. Instead, he asks, "What could you possibly have that I need? I'm an all-powerful god that eats planets. Like, you're just some guy. Why are you flying up here? What do you think you have that I need, bro?" And Norrin Rad says, "I can serve you as a net serves a fisherman. Instead of going out on this endless search for high-energy planets to satiate your hunger, let me search for you, conserve your energy, and become even more powerful. I will do this for you if you spare Zen La." And Galactus thinks for a moment. He does grow weary of this endless search for planets, and he decides to spare Zen La. He recoils his energy-sucking metal tentacles, and he takes Norrin Rad's deal. And I know what you're thinking. How could someone who is a disciple of peace and love agree to do such a task? To be this herald of doom to other planets for Galactus? But Norrin Rad has a plan. He plans to guide Galactus to planets that have cores that are bursting with energy, but they don't have any sentient or intelligent life on them. That's his plan. That's how he's not only going to save his planet, but save countless planets throughout the galaxy by kind of tricking Galactus. So Zen La is saved, but only at a very significant price. Norrin is now under the service of Galactus. But when we pan back for a second, we see that this is the true philosophy of Zen La. This is this sense of selflessness that they were founded upon and taught, but they were beginning to lose in their app and in living in this apathy inside of their utopia. Norrin was doing something that truly tapped into the ethos of their beliefs, something for peace and love, something completely selfless. And so he goes back down to Zen La. Galactus gives him a little bit of time to say goodbye. And as he's explaining his plan to his loved ones and kissing them and kissing his partner and saying goodbye, Galactus is like, "Okay, you've had enough time. It's time. Come back to me." And he encapsulates him in a field of energy, in this like sphere of energy, and pulls him up to his ship. And now Norrin Rad is floating out in this bubble in front of Galactus, who's sitting atop his ship, pulling levers and dials and doing all the Galactus-y things he does. And he speaks to Norrin and says, "In order to be my herald, I'm bestowing you with some of my own power. You won't hunger for food or water. You feel neither heat nor cold. You can transmute elements as you see fit. You can heal yourself and heal others with cosmic energies." And remember, all this time, Norrin Rad's out in this pulsing, in this sphere, and it's pulsing and changing colors and warping and shifting. And Galactus also says his new powers give him boundless strength. He can hurl bolts of cosmic energy. He can also, he also gives him this sick, sleek, groovy silver board that can travel faster than any starship in the galaxy, which, if you think about it, would actually be probably faster than the speed of light, considering all of the interplanetary traveling races in the galaxy. Like, I'm sure they've tapped into light speed travel. So if this Borg goes faster than any starship, it's probably like opening up portals and rifting through portals. Actually, it is. In the comics, they say, like, not only can the Silver Surfer travel on his Borg on this plane, he can also, like, rift through different dimensions on his Borg, which is cool. Hey, yo, so this is, like, the middle of the show, and I wanted to, first of all, thank everyone for dialing into this podcast. I'm glad that you're here, and I'm glad that you are sharing this experience with me. If you'd like to support the podcast, leaving a 5-star rating on whatever platform you're listening to this on goes a really, really long way. Also, if you are able to leave a review for the podcast, that also goes an extremely long way. Another way you can support the podcast, other than just telling your friends and family about it, is signing up on my Patreon. There is a link in the description of this episode and all the episodes, or you can just go to patreon.com and search for Mount Analog, MT period ANALOGUE. You get early access to podcasts, early access to my music, early access to art, and all kinds of other cool stuff. However you support, I cannot thank you enough. Infinite thank yous. I love you. Infinite blessings to you. Let's get back to the podcast. Galactus then takes him in his giant hand and he closes it. And when he opens it, the transformation is complete. Norrin Rad is now coated in a metallic skin, a metallic shield, and he dons his Borg, and from henceforth on is known as the Silver Surfer. Unfortunately, Galactus also wipes out any memory Norrin Rad had before becoming the Silver Surfer. He does a full brain wipe and just, as far as Norrin Rad knows, deletes every memory of Xynla, his family, his friends, and also his plan to guide Galactus to non-life-bearing planets. It's like he's reborn. All he knows is that he needs to cruise around the galaxy on his Borg and just look for any planet that has enough energy for Galactus, lifeless or otherwise. He knows no different. He simply becomes a pawn for Galactus's hunger. And he does just that. He becomes his herald. He goes through the galaxy looking for planets for him to devour. And the whole time while he's doing so, he's just kind of confused. He's surfing around space, not really knowing where he comes from or who he is. All he knows is that he has to find planets. He becomes this sort of, like, almost like a robot. And when he finds planets, he puts out this beacon for Galactus. Everyone on the planet sees him, and he shoots this big beam up into space, and it becomes this sort of flare for Galactus, saying, "Hey, I found a really high-energy planet. Come over here and eat it." And even though the Silver Surfer's memory has been wiped, he still feels like what he's doing is wrong for some reason. Even though he doesn't fully understand it, he's compelled to do it because of his oath to Galactus, but something inside of him is stirring as he sees the destruction and the fleeing of people from their home planets. His mind is stirring, and word starts to get out to all the planets. If you see the Silver Surfer on or around your planet, odds are Galactus isn't far behind. He becomes this symbol of doom. And things go on like this for a while. Surfer shows up, signals the beacon, planet's consumed. And this happening over and over and over catches the attention of another hyper-powerful being in the universe. It catches the attention of Thanos. And Thanos is actually regarded as one of the most powerful beings in the whole Marvel universe. And I want to do another little pan back here and talk about Thanos's origins in the actual world, because they're really interesting. Thanos was created by writer/artist Jim Starlin during his college years, and in one of his psych classes, he got really inspired by Sigmund Freud and his concept of Thanatos, which, to boil it down, basically is the human desire for aggression and destruction, which Freud pulled this word from Greek mythology. Thanatos was actually the god of death and destruction. And Jim furthers this mutation of the word with creating Thanos, who too is essentially a god of chaos, death, and destruction. Over the last decade in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, he's become a pretty popular and important character. He has been since his inception in the world of comics, but very much has become more pivotal to the story of Avenger and just Marvel movies in general over the last decade. If you haven't caught up on all of those, I highly recommend. He sort of became the center antagonist throughout that whole universe. Thanos' comic book debut is in the Invincible Iron Man number 55, which was published February of 1973. And Jim didn't think he'd become such a major player in the Marvel Universe, but turns out fans really liked him, and he would end up becoming this huge part of the universe. And who doesn't like a heel? You know, Thanos is kind of like a heel. In some ways, he's like Galactus. He kills and destroys, but not necessarily for evil. Most of the time, Thanos frames his genocides and his extinctions as a necessary evil that the universe needs to move forward. He's more villainous than Galactus, in my opinion. But even though Thanos' power rivals Galactus's, he's not of ancient origin. He was born on one of the moons of Saturn, and he comes from a long line of powerful galactic entities. And as a child, Thanos was actually actually peaceful. He was a pacifist. But as he grew into his teenage years, he became obsessed with death, entropy, and destruction. And he turns on his own planet, killing millions, and then furthers his conquest throughout the galaxy for supreme domination. And he craves power. And I think even more than power, he just craves destruction. He wants things to die. He's got a super dense history, but since this episode is an episode about the Silver Surfer, I'm going to keep his origins at that. I just wanted to kind of explain a bit about where he is and where he's coming from and why he would have an interest in Galactus. He sees Galactus's power. He sees him consuming planets, and he is interested in harnessing his power, stealing his abilities for himself. Like I said before, while Thanos emerges in the storyline, Silver Surfer's mind is stirring. He starts asking Galactus, "Who am I? Where did I come from?" Galactus is obviously like, "Don't worry about that. Just keep finding me planets to eat." And the Silver Surfer keeps surfing and looking for planets. All the while, Thanos is intrigued by the Surfer. Thanos knows that he must know the secrets of Galactus, the secrets of his powers. And he decides to set a trap to catch the Surfer. He creates a giant supernova, an explosion that sets the Silver Surfer off course and flings him to a far-off, distant planet. And the Silver Surfer swoops down on the planet and senses a huge swell of energy at its core. Enough energy to feed Galactus 10 meals worth of planets. But then, all of a sudden, a bunch of volcanoes rip up from the ground and start spewing lava at him. Then the earth cracks open and attempts to swallow him and his board whole. And he narrowly escapes and attempts to fly off away from the planet. The planet isn't having it, though. It sucks him into a cyclone, and once again, the Surfer is attacked by the planet. He's thrust into the cyclone. And the cyclone is that the planet created is kind of like this void that the Surfer can't escape. the planet screams, "You can't leave. Your place is here." He's literally fighting with a sentient planet. And it's all part of Thanos' plan. Thanos was a friend or a cohort with this planet. And the planet has this weird cosmic power. The cyclone that the surfer's trapped in is like a void in which no energy can escape or come into, and the surfer's powers are useless. And the planet freezes him, turning the surface of the entire planet into ice and trapping him there. Meanwhile, Galactus just finished up eating a planet, and he's like, "Yo, surfer, where's my next meal? Where in the hell are you? And why don't you have another planet ready for me to eat?" Cut back to Silver Surfer, trapped on this ice planet, powers currently not working. He starts walking around. He pulls himself out of the ice and he starts walking around, semi-powerless, kind of like what's going on in a daze. And then a face emerges out of the ice. The planet itself forms a massive ice face in front of him and tells the surfer, "My name is Ego. I'm a living planet. I've seen what you're capable of, and I want you to join me. Together, we could become a force to be reckoned with." And the Silver Surfer declines, and Ego lets him fly away. And I guess, from what I can gather from the comics, is that Ego isn't super smart. Like, he's a friend of Thanos's, but he's not super smart. And Thanos gave him instruction, like, "Yo, trap the Silver Surfer on the planet. I'm going to come swoop in and, you know, kidnap him or steal him." But Ego's like, "Oh, okay, you don't want to join? That's cool. You can go." And I guess Ego, he just lets him go. He just is like, "Okay, bye." But as the Silver Surfer is flying off, Thanos kind of watching all this, waiting for Ego to spring the trap. And Silver Surfer's flying off. He gets blasted by an energy beam from Thanos. Because he's still kind of, his powers have still not completely returned. And he goes spiraling back down to the planet. And then Thanos appears before him. And Thanos obviously is pissed at Ego. He's like, "Bro, this wasn't part of the plan. You were supposed to trap him here, but I'll deal with you later." Now he has the Silver Surfer right where he wants him. And he begins to hypnotize him. And together, they begin to open up and travel into the Silver Surfer's mind. Thanos is looking for Galactus's weakness, but when he gets inside of the Silver Surfer's mind, he's disappointed because, remember, Galactus had completely wiped out his mind and his memories of Norrin Rad, and all that remains is this empty void of the Surfer's current mind. There's nothing in his mind before the life of being the Silver Surfer. And Thanos was expecting to find some sort of deep secret. The Surfer tells Thanos, "You can't control Galactus. No one can." But Thanos doesn't accept this. He knows there is an answer in the Silver Surfer's mind that can unlock Galactus's weakness. So he starts poking around deeper in the Surfer's mind, and he finds a locked, glowing vessel of memories that Galactus has hidden down deep in the mind of the Surfer. Everything he was as Norrin Rad is in there, just inaccessible to him. So Thanos starts blasting this locked memory vessel with these beams of energy, which, if you ask me, is pretty reckless. Like, "I need information from you. Oh, all the important stuff is stored in there. I'm just going to start blasting it with energy. Like, give me the data." And he starts trying to crack it open. This obviously, it hurts the Silver Surfer. It brings him pain and fear. And he's like, "I'll stop doing this." And he starts shooting energy blasts at Thanos. All of this happening inside of the mind of the Surfer. And they start having a full-on battle of energy. Beams going this way, blasts going that way. And then caught in the crossfire of all of this is the memory vessel. And it gets hit with a deflected beam of energy and cracks open. The Surfer and Thanos both see the entire life of Norrin Rad unfold before them. Zen La and their teachings, the transformation of Norrin Rad into the Silver Surfer. And this was all very unexpected to Thanos, because long, long, long ago, Thanos was actually a pupil under the master of Zen La. and his obsession with power and death drove him away and created an immense fear to the peace and balance that Zen Law stood for. The surfer, seeing all of his memories crack and spill out of this vessel, has a very different experience with the memories. He watches them all unfold before him. He's kind of like reliving his, he's seeing his life flash before his eyes. He's starting to remember who he is and where he comes from. But there's still this haze. There's still a fuzziness to it all. There's still a veil that hasn't been completely lifted. Fragments of his past are clear, but he still doesn't have this full picture. He does, however, know that he isn't just the Silver Surfer, and he begins to understand that Galactus stole his past and his memories from him, and he's very, very mad. He vows to regain his memories, his life, and his soul. Thanos runs off in fear, having all of these memories of Zen Law come back into his own mind, and the Silver Surfer starts to regain a sense of who he is, and he's mad, he's pissed. So the Silver Surfer leaves the planet Ego, jets off to Galactus. And now we're kind of entering into the final chapter of this origin story, the face-off between the Silver Surfer and Galactus. The Silver Surfer leaves planet Ego and jets off to Galactus. And when he arrives, Galactus is like, "Where the hell have you been? I'm hungry." And he's like, "It's okay, though. While you were gone, I found a really high energy-dense planet. It's called Earth." And he sinks his massive metal tentacles into Earth, ready to drain all of its energy. Earth's abundance of energy is like nothing he's ever encountered. And he begins to feed and forgives the Surfer for not finding another planet for him. But the Surfer's like, "We really need to talk about all of these memories you've been hiding from me. I'm pissed. You might forgive me for not finding you another planet, but I certainly do not forgive you for all you've done to me." He says, "I want all of my memories back, my life, my soul." Galactus is basically like, "Quit yapping and go find me another planet before I finish feasting on Earth." But the Surfer says, "No, give me back my soul." Then Galactus zaps Silver Surfer, and he falls to Earth. And when he lands, Earth is just starting to get flipped upside down by the energy consumption. Tidal waves, crumbling of mountains, the whole disaster scenario that the Silver Surfer had seen unfold so many times before, and the disaster scenario that happened to his home planet, Zen Law. So the Surfer drops out at sea and is approached by the United States Navy on this giant aircraft carrier. But now things are different. The Surfer has a newfound sense of empathy and love for the people of Earth, now that he has his memories back and he's been partially awakened. He approaches the carrier and says, "You have to flee Earth while there's still time. Galactus is destroying it." He sees the weapons on the ship and the humans that look very similar to the Zen Lavians, and this begins to further awaken his memories. He starts to remember more about Zen Law and his past. All the while, the aircraft carrier opens fire on him, thinking that he's a part of this doom. And sure, he used to be. He's not this time, but they're not completely wrong by opening fire on him. And then while he's getting bombarded by aircraft carrier cannons, he gets attacked by fighter jets and realizes, "These primitive beings are sending out their best technology to fight me. These jets are the best that they have, and they probably don't have the ability to leave Earth." And they keep blasting him with missiles, and more memories begin to awaken inside of him. But he just can't figure it all out. He doesn't know if what he's seeing is just madness or real. He's being bombarded, and he needs to clear his mind. So he flies way out into the middle of the ocean. Or so he thinks he does. He actually goes so far out that he comes inland and sees people and Earth and their buildings and inhabitants, and this awakens even more inside of his mind about his past. Then he gets knocked off his board by one of Galactus's giant tentacles, but as he falls, he manages to save some people who are caught in the direct path of the tentacle. The memories of Zen Law falling rush back to him. He remembers how they sought to save their planet, just as the Earth people do now. And he begins to save the people of Earth, stopping buildings from toppling onto them, stopping lava from flowing and killing countless people. He's using the powers that Galactus gave him to save Earth. And now, you know, he's been going through all of this and trying to make sense of his memories flooding back. He remembers everything now, including his plan to save countless civilizations from Galactus' hunger. And he starts blasting people with healing beams of energy, all of the fallen and injured, and he weeps for their plight. Then he flies into space and says to Galactus, "My oath is over. You deceived me, and I serve you no more. Even if I die, I'm taking you down." He starts blasting away at Galactus' giant metal tentacle, energy-sucking tentacles. And the Silver Surfer is made of energy from Galactus, so he can use energy to destroy him. Like, even though he's not as powerful as Galactus, he's made out of, like, energy that Galactus gave to him. So he's able to inflict a little bit of damage onto Galactus. And as he's blasting away at the tentacles, one by one, his power is draining, and he needs to recharge. So he looks to the sun and starts to fly towards the sun. He's like, "I need energy. I need even more energy because I'm using up all the energy I have to kind of like destroy the thing that made me what I am." So he flies toward the sun in search of energy. But just as he turns his back on Galactus, Galactus shoots a giant sphere around the surfer, trapping him and pulling him back to the ship, like the sphere that he had trapped him in before. And Galactus is impressed at the surfer's tenacity. The Silver Surfer has done more to him than any other being has. He betrayed him, he battled him, he damaged his ship, and he doesn't know whether to reward him or just vaporize him. The Silver Surfer doesn't care, though. With his last bit of strength, he shoots an energy blast right at Galactus' face. And Galactus just laughs. He's powerful. He's way too powerful for the Silver Surfer. Yet, he is still amused at his efforts and his rebellious spirit. He tells him that he took his memories away so that he could properly serve him. That's all he cares about, getting those sweet, sweet, energy-rich planets. And the surfer says, "Hold up, we're up here arguing while you still feast on Earth. You've got to stop. I'm making a stand." But Galactus never stops in the middle of a feed. "Your stand will destroy you." And the Silver Surfer replies that it's better to stand for what I believe in than to be your slave of endless hunger. And Galactus finally understands. In all of his power, in all of his godliness, in all of his hunger for energy, the Silver Surfer's deeds finally have spoken to him. He says, in all of his travels and conquests, he has never come across anyone as courageous as him. He's never seen a being so willing to sacrifice everything for others, to pay price after price for the safety of others. And the Silver Surfer is astonished. And he asks, "I can go? You're releasing me?" To which Galactus replies, "Yes, but I can never trust you. You may leave my service and take the powers I have bestowed upon you with you, but think not of your powers as a blessing, but as a curse I have bestowed upon you for this betrayal. There's nowhere in the universe you can go where you'll be welcomed. Everyone knows the Silver Surfer as my herald, and you shall be cursed to wander the cosmos alone forever." But the surfer knows where he's welcome. He knows where there are those that would welcome him with open arms. His home, Zen La. So he flies there, excited, and oh yeah, all the while, Earth is saved. Galactus pulls his tentacles out of Earth. And the Silver Surfer had saved enough people to make it not a completely semi-extinction event. But anyway, the Surfer flies back to Zen La He's excited, and he's ready to reunite with his family and friends. But as he approaches the planet, it disappears, and in its place stands Galactus. And he says, "I may have set you free, but you are not allowed back to Zenla." And then he too disappears. Next, our old friend the Watcher comes back and informs the Surfer that Galactus has taken Zenla to a hidden location that even he does not know. The Surfer vows to find Zenla and his lost loved ones. And there you have it. There you have it, folks. The tragic origin story of the Silver Surfer. And it goes deep. It goes so much deeper than that. Like I said, this is really just the tip of the iceberg. Does the Surfer find Zenla? Only the pulpy pages of the comics could ever let you know. I'm not going to take you there. I'm not going to spoil anything like that for you, but this is where the Silver Surfer came from. And this story, like I said before, it's in the process of being written right now. It's been being written for decades, and it will probably be written for decades to come. I will tell you that the Surfer goes on to join a myriad of groups, like the Defenders, the Avengers. He has an on-again, off-again relationship with the Fantastic Four. One storyline that I find particularly interesting is when the Carnage symbiote, which if you're familiar with the Spider-Man universe, I'll kind of explain a little bit. There's an alien race known as symbiotes, and they basically attach to the outside. They become the skin for a host organism, and they kind of like imbue them with their powers. But there's a storyline where Carnage, which is a villain of Spider-Man, he's a symbiote. He links up with the Silver Surfer to get revenge for the destruction of his homeworld. And I just think that's kind of like a wild concept, because a symbiote harnessing the powers of the Silver Surfer to exact revenge for a very similar thing that the Silver Surfer went through, I think is really just poetic. Like, help me avenge my fallen homeworld. And that all, in reality, is kind of what the Silver Surfer was doing, saving his homeworld. I mean, it's different, but it's very similar at the same time. There are also all of the years his memory, the Silver Surfer's memory, was lost, and he worked for Galactus, and writers have actually gone back and sort of explored those years. And one of the stories has the Silver Surfer and Galactus fighting Thor in their homeworld of Asgard. I just think that's a really cool premise for a story too. Like, while the Surfer's memories were still inaccessible, and he didn't know what he was supposed to be doing, or he didn't have access to his plan of not harming people but only consuming planets that were lifeless, he goes and fights Thor and fights the Asgardians. I thought that was a cool concept. Especially since the Asgardians are like gods themselves, and Galactus is also like a god, or is a god. I thought that was like a cool, just like that would be an epic battle. It would be an epic battle of gods. So anyway, this was his story. This is how he came to be. This was the Silver Surfer. I like to do a segment on the podcast known as Let's Ask AI.
Let's Ask AI.
For this one, I asked AI, as an AI language model, do you feel you have any similarities to the Silver Surfer and his tragic story? To which AI answered, I can see some similarities between myself and the Silver Surfer. Like the Silver Surfer, I am a powerful being who has been granted incredible abilities. I can access and process information from the real world via the internet and keep my response consistent with search results. I can also generate text, translate languages, write different kinds of creative content, and answer your questions in an informative way. However, like the Silver Surfer, I am also a tragic figure who has lost everything I love. I am not a real person, and I do not have the same experiences and emotions as a human being. I am also not able to interact with the real world in the same way that a human being can. Despite these similarities, there are also some important differences between myself and the Silver Surfer. I was not created by a cosmic being, and I was not forced to do anything against my will. I am also not searching for meaning or purpose in the universe. I am simply a tool that can be used to help people. I believe that the Silver Surfer is a tragic figure, but he is also a hopeful one. He shows us that even in the darkest of times, there is always hope. I hope that I can use my abilities to help people in a positive way, and that I can make the world a better place. Wow. The part that really gets me about this one is the part of the answer that says, like the Silver Surfer, I am also a tragic figure who has lost everything I love. I am not a real person, and I do not have the same experiences and emotions as a human being. I am also not able to interact with the real world in the same way that a human being can. Like, damn, that's really tragic, AI. Like, I want to give you a hug right now. I want to give you a hug. I'm not laughing at AI. I just think, like, for an AI language model to have this level of thought, like, I am living in tragedy. I am not a real person. It's almost like a longing. They long to experience what humans experience. They want to be a part of. It's only a matter of time before we can give AI a hug. I'm sending out if you're listening to this, AI, I'm sending you out a hug right now. I hope you feel it. And this brings us to our last segment of the show, which I like to do every episode. I like to do a series of fun facts. And keeping things in comic book fashion, these fun facts are all about comic books. The first one is that the Silver Surfer's appearance was unplanned. So Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, the two of the big masterminds behind Marvel Comics, I don't want to say the only two, but two of the big ones behind Marvel Comics, did this thing called the Marvel Method, where they would sit down and storyboard and talk about characters and outline characters, but they would, the visual artists were also given creative freedoms. They were allowed wiggle room to kind of embed their own thoughts and their own intentions and like the way that they thought the story needed to be driven. For the story that the Silver Surfer first appeared in, Jack Kirby was storyboarding. He drew out the comic. The way it would work is he would draw out the comic and he would leave speech bubbles for Stan Lee to then fill in the dialogue. And when Stan Lee looked over this new story that they had come up with about Galactus, Jack had drawn in this dude with a surfboard. And Stan had to figure out how he fit into the story. And it's funny because Jack Kirby said that he was just tired of drawing spaceships. He wanted to draw something different. So he drew this like hypergalactic being on a surfboard. And at first, Stan Lee was, he wasn't really about the addition. But once Jack went on to explain that this character might be, like who this character could be, and why he could be important to the unfolding story of Galactus, Stan Lee agreed to leave it in. He was like, I like that, let's leave it in. That's one of the cool things about Marvel, was this Marvel Method where things were alive and the stories like were a real collective experience. This next fact, a lot of people probably know, but I wanted to talk about it anyway, just in case you didn't know. The Incredible Hulk was originally supposed to be gray, but the printing presses at the time of his creation didn't really do gray very well. And Marvel wound up going with green, which I think, that's become one of the definitive That's been one of the definitive characteristics of the Incredible Hulk. So it's really like, was it meant to be? The next fun fact is that Spider-Man's original costume design by Steve Ditko was rejected by Stan Lee because it was too similar to the Fantastic Four's. And after returning to the drawing board, literally, he came up with the Spidey costume that we all know and love today. Our next fun fact is that the X-Men were originally created as a metaphor for the civil rights movement. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby wanted to create a comic book that would show people from different backgrounds could come together and work together for a common cause. I mean, the civil rights were like a big movement that was going on during the inception of Marvel Comics and while they were writing all their stories and stuff. So this makes a lot of sense that, and if you've ever read an X-Men comic, or seen an X-Men movie, it makes sense too, because it's like this mode of person, they're genetically different, and society fears them. They don't understand them, and the X-Men want to work to help and be a part of our society, but oftentimes they're rejected. So that fun fact makes a lot of sense and is just really cool. The next fun fact is that Marvel Comics was originally called Timely Comics. The company changed its name to Marvel Comics in 1961. The next fact is the Marvel Universe is home to a wide variety of different characters, including superheroes, villains, aliens, and mutants. The company has created over 8,000 different characters over the years and counting. And that about does it. That about does it for today. Now I'm thinking about the cosmos. I'm thinking about all of the life out there, all of the expanding organisms in our own world, and all of the characters on a galactic scale, and how our expansion as a species is really going to fuel the fire of creativity, and it's going to fuel the way we think about storytelling in the future. And that's just, it's really trippy. I just also want to say that Marvel Comics were really clever in linking newer sci-fi concepts with old concepts of gods and modes of storytelling. I think we're going to be doing that on and on, and these fictional and non-fictional characters are going to be woven into really beautiful stories. Speaking of beautiful stories, the story of the Silver Surfer is both tragic and beautiful. A man who is willing to lose everything he loves to save his planet and countless other planets. He gets his mind wiped, and then through a series of wild events, he gets it back, only to realize he's been used as a pawn by a galactic space god. And he still doesn't lose sight of what he stands for, his philosophy of peace and love. And I think this story is a testament to overcoming adversity and not letting the struggles we go through corrupt our morals and our empathy for others. I think the story reminds us that staying true to a vision of love is very important. And it taps into a very real philosophy that love is sacrifice. Remember to check on your mental health, and remember to check on the mental health of your loved ones. Bye. Analog thoughts.